it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In today's show, we cover the five biggest news stories from the world of Formula One, which this week are: is the 2024 calendar taking shape? Audi continuing to plan for F1? Tire talk continues. Are we in the boring era of F1? And should F1 return to the past?
Goodman, and you're listening to the fantastic Cut to the Race podcast.
Hello, my name is Brian Mylander, and you're listening to the Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Rosanna Tennant, and you are listening to the incredible Cut to the Race podcast.
Hi, I'm Jordan King, and you're listening to the Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Crofty. You're listening to the Cut to the Race podcast. It's lights out, and away we go!
Welcome to News from the Nerds, the midweek news show brought to you by the Formula Nerds. Once a week, we update you on everything you need to know from the world of Formula One. Make sure you keep up to date with all the latest news by visiting our website at www.formulanerds.com. My name is Ollie, and with me we have the reliable duo, as normal. It's Abby and Sam. How are you both?
I'm very well, thank you, Ollie. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very warm. It's still hot in the UK, but you can't complain. When it's cold, it's too cold. When it's hot, it's too hot. Sam, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Ollie. I disagree with you fundamentally, though. You absolutely can complain. In fact, you should complain. What else is there to do when the weather's hot or cold?
It's very British to complain about the weather, isn't it?
Yeah, you need a base level of dissatisfaction to live in the UK.
So if you lived somewhere, I don't know, hot like Florida, you'd be happy with that, would you, Sam? Or because you're British, you'd still be unhappy?
No, far too swampy. too moist, too humid.
Yeah, okay. I'm not a fan of that word, Sam. So we're going to get straight into our first topic this week. Speaking of locations, we're going to talk about the 2024 calendar. Now, there's various rumours going around online about what race could be where. But one thing we are pretty certain of is that Japan this year is going to be much earlier on, obviously based on what we saw last year and the weather in Japan. There's talk of Saudi set to host the 2024 season opener. Personally, I can't see that, although it was there is something in that. And overall, F1 are out on a mission to make the calendar more efficient in terms of travel. So there are some draft calendars going around at the moment with changes such as Azerbaijan being near the back end, sort of in September time, with Japan being in sort of April, and then having USA, Mexico, Brazil, Las Vegas, obviously all towards the end of the season. I'm not sure how much there is to read into at the moment on this, but I think the calendar has to be more efficient in terms of miles travelled. And if you're in Australia, you shouldn't be going to the Middle East and then off to America. That, we just know this. But guys, do you think that F1 are going to have this nailed in time? Because there's a huge logistical operation behind the scenes here, which they've practiced over many, many, many years of how to get from A to B in a certain order. If that all changes, it's going to be a bit of a nightmare, surely.
I think it is something that definitely needs looking at. Obviously, F1 wants to be net carbon zero by 2030. They're driving their sustainability movement forward. And doing the calendar the way that it is this year doesn't help. Like you said, Ollie, we had Baku and then we went to Miami and then we were supposed to go to Imola and then we went to Spain and then Canada and then we're back in Europe for Austria. So the logistics of the calendar at the moment don't work. I feel like they need to group it by like continent in a way, because then it would make it easier to get around. It would be less carbon going out into the world and it would just help them reach their net carbon zero goal. With Saudi being the season opener, there has been interest from Saudi to host that. I think the main reason is they want to have the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix before Ramadan, but obviously Bahrain also involved in Ramadan and they're the season opener at the moment. So we may see a switch between those two, but either way, those races I think will remain at the beginning of the season. With Japan, at the moment, it is at the end of September this year. It is typhoon season. Moving it earlier, I think they're looking to move it to the end of March, beginning of April, which is like the cherry blossom season for the country. That would mean less risk of wet weather, which we all saw what happened at the Japanese Grand Prix last year. I don't think they'll necessarily have it all worked out in the best possible way for 2024, but I think they'll certainly get it done soon.
And one thing that we're pretty sure is going to happen is the Chinese Grand Prix, subject to, obviously, COVID. Sam, do you think the Chinese Grand Prix is going to happen? And what do you think about the rest of the potential calendar and the ways they can do it?
I don't think that the Chinese Grand Prix is going to happen. I think it's there because there's a contract there. I wouldn't be surprised if every year it's put there, kind of on the understanding that it's probably not going to go ahead. That could be a likely scenario. It's a shame because it was a popular venue in F1 and it's been around for almost two decades now, which feels mad to talk about. Obviously, we haven't had a race there since 2019, but, you know, so 15 good years of racing odd. With regards to the calendar, though, it makes sense to pair that with Japan if a Chinese Grand Prix does go ahead. And as Abby said, cherry blossom season, I reckon that could be pretty spectacular. There's talks of Baku potentially being pushed back to September. And yeah, the Saudi Arabia Bahrain situation is a difficult one because you want to group those two together, but it's difficult to get both of them in before Ramadan, which is becoming increasingly early in the year. So you could potentially move on to the back end of the year. Saudi Arabia wants to be a season opener, but at the moment, Bahrain holds the cards when it comes to that. And then obviously Australia as well traditionally was. So, yeah, I'm not buying too much into what we're hearing so far. We'll have to wait and see. It's subject to change. We hear rumours all the time. But, yeah, I think there needs to be work to better group the races together.
And ultimately, at this stage in the year, we're in June now. It's a huge undertaking to start changing or substantially changing the order of events because there are contracts in place. There are promoters who are already working on selling tickets to events. And obviously the logistics, you've got to get planes ready. You've got to get boats ready. It's not just as simple as, well, we'll go there on that day and we'll go there on that day. This, you know, they're working on these things way in advance. And it just, you know, with the when we had the COVID season, it just goes to show how well they really did to get those races on. Obviously, it was behind closed doors, but still, to get any races on at all was fantastic. But moving on, some news on Audi, Sam.
Yes, so we've talked about Audi a fair amount on this podcast over the past few months. And those of you who listen regularly will know that I get kind of fed up when we talk about Audi drivers all the time. It's, you know, 3 years away still, or 2.5 seasons at least. It's a bit much, really, isn't it? But going to have to at least partially walk that back this week because Audi have indeed signed their first driver. It is Neil Janey, who is a very, very experienced racing driver. He has been signed to their simulation role. So he'll be in the simulator working on the power unit, working on general development as they look to launch the team in 2026. If you don't know, he's a Swiss driver who has experience in Formula E, GP2. He also has experience in Formula One as the third driver for Toro Rosso back in 2006, 2007. Around that era, so he's been around the block. Also has a extensive career in sports cars, so he is a valuable asset to the team. He will know if they're on the right path, if they're not. So yeah, things starting to fall into place at Audi, but obviously I will maintain it's obviously not quite the draw of an actual in the car number one or two driver or even reserve driver at this stage.
So one thing you don't need when you're driving in a test simulator is tyre blankets, which takes us on lovely to our next topic, Abby.
Well, it has been the talk of the sport for many months now that F1 were looking to remove tyre blankets completely. And we saw in Monaco the introduction of blanket-free wet tyres, but slick tyre development is still ongoing. Obviously, in Barcelona, Mercedes and Ferrari did a Pirelli tyre test where they
Here we go.
Sorry.
Barcelona.
Already got the fancy names in there. Sorry for interrupting you, Abby, but
that's okay.
That can't go unchecked.
They did the Pirelli tyre test on the new tyres without the tyre blankets. And George Russell had said that he would be very concerned for all the mechanics in the pit lane during a pit stop and for the drivers on an outlap from a race in cold conditions. There'll be crashes, I have no doubt. And Charles Leclerc echoed Russell's sentiments and said that it will be interesting how blanket-free tyres perform in less favourable conditions. But now Mario Rizzola has confirmed that whilst they're still in the development of producing blanket-free tyres, and it is safety that is a priority, there's also the impact on the racing in terms of level of degradation, peak of grip, and those kind of elements, as well as the undercut. Because they have said that if the tyres take longer to heat to their peak potential, drivers could be forced to be more conservative with their pit stops, which could then mix up the race strategy, overtaking as well. But Pirelli may be in danger of not having their contract renewed, as Bridgestone, who were previously the tyre supplier from 2007 to 2010, they have now lodged a bid to be the next tyre supplier from 2025. So there's this battle between team principals not wanting to have blanket-free tyres, drivers being a bit conservative, but Pirelli possibly being out of their contract to be the main supplier.
I've got a quick question on this. Why do they want to get rid of blankets in the first place? Is it to make the race more exciting, or is it for sustainability? Does anyone know?
I think it's both, really. Is, you know, yes, to zhuzh it up a bit, make it a little bit more fun. They're not used in other formula, so does F1 really need them? Is the argument? Also, it would make from an environmental perspective, it'd make it significantly easier logistically for Pirelli to move the tyres around the world. And there's other factors attached to that, which is most likely the driving force. But Abby, you make a good point that Pirelli are in a very difficult position here, a kind of very typical cliche rock and a hard place situation where this has obviously been brought in or wanted to be introduced by Pirelli and F1. There is hesitancy from the drivers and the teams to implement this. Their tender is up at the end of 2025. How do they go from there? Or is it in the end of 2024 even potentially? Where do they go from there? Yeah, I think it is. And could Bridgestone use this to their advantage?
And isn't Pirelli about to be bought by a Chinese company as well? I'm pretty sure it is. I saw it in the news the other day. Pirelli is about, well, there's been a bid to take over Pirelli by the Chinese.
Well, with Bridgestone, only Hamilton, Alonso and Hülkenberg have raced on Bridgestone tyres before out of the current grid. And a lot of the drivers are actually on board for Bridgestone to be the main tyre supplier. And the company have pledged that if they were to be the main tyre supplier, they would create a tyre on which drivers can push harder for longer, which is what one of the main concerns for the drivers has been. So,
oh, completely. And you can't underestimate the power and the weight of the driver's support in this situation. I do think that Bridgestone is somewhat in a fortunate position whereby, yes, the last time they raced in F1, there's three drivers who are all well-respected. You know, two of them are world champions who are saying, yeah, they were great, honestly. But F1 cars are entirely different from where they were 15 years ago. The downforce and the cornering speeds are far, far greater. It is an entirely different prospect. So you do have to appreciate that there is a status quo bias for Pirelli here. Better the devil you know. What if Bridgestone win the tender and they can't produce? They're going to look pretty silly. And then all of a sudden, you're going to have the weight of the drivers going, we were expecting more than this. So it's a risk. It's a risk for F1 to make this change. Would it be unfair in Pirelli? I think so. But yeah, I think they're torn between that kind of, I don't think they've done enough to lose the contract, but I don't know if they've done enough to retain it at this stage. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting development. I'm just a little bit disappointed that we couldn't have both at the same time. I think having a sole tyre supplier is less interesting. And Ollie's laughing at me because I've just very, very accurately hit a fly out of my way because I am indeed Spider-Man.
I think, yeah, I personally, Sam, wouldn't want to see two tyre suppliers. I think it just creates an extra dimension that you don't need. Oh, God, Mercedes, they went for the wrong one and now they're last all year, you know. But going back to the tyre blankets thing, Otmar Szafnauer suggested it's just part of F1. And I think I agree with him. Don't fix it if it ain't broken. And we've seen different cars struggle to get tyres up to temperature. I think that's all we need, right? We don't then need a rainy or very cold Silverstone race, for example, where they can't actually drive because they can't get the tyre temps up and then it causes havoc. We can race at the moment. Let's not change it, surely.
Well, Christian Horner has said that everybody has tyre blankets. They do the job. I think what we should be looking at is sustainable ways of powering those blankets as opposed to removing them. Whereas James Vowles of Williams has said he has a more pragmatic view in that if you show them a tyre where you can take the blanket off and it performs in Spa, whether it's 5 degrees or whether in Bahrain at 40 degrees, then he'll happily sign up because it's a good step. So Pirelli need to make sure that these tyres actually do the job that they're supposed to do and don't derail the whole concept.
That feels impossible. That's not fair.
This is, again, the very nexus of the issue for Pirelli. Mm. They've been asked to produce degradable tyres. They went, by F1 standards, too far back in the early days of their tenure in F1 and have then restructured the compound, made them more durable, and have taken on board the feedback and adapted as F1 has wished them to do. But also, if they produce tyres that you could race flat out for the whole race, that wouldn't work in modern-day Formula 1 because you don't have refuelling and you don't have a tyre war. You don't have all these variables that you would need in place if you could race the tyre the whole way. Yeah, it's there's pluses and minuses to both ways, but this is where we currently are. So, yeah, they're kind of given a thankless task.
Maybe they can do it, but it will be a 10-stop race because it'll just be like road tyres. Who knows? Talking of stops, we're going to take a pause for the cause and we'll be back in just a moment.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
So, is F1 getting boring? Or is F1 already boring? It's a big question that we ask ourselves week in, week out at the moment, particularly at the moment. A few stats to bring in this conversation, because it is quite an open dialogue, this one. So we're, of course, approaching the Austrian Grand Prix. Then we have the British Grand Prix. They were the other way around last year, but Ferrari won in Silverstone. They won in Austria. From that point onwards, that was the last time Ferrari won in F1. Red Bull have won all but one race or Grand Prix.
How many is that, Sam?
That is, I mean, they've won 18 of the last 19, which is, I'm assuming, going back that far. Max Verstappen has won 21 of the last 30. And if you go back into the end of 2021, that's 22 of the last 31. That is ridiculous levels of dominance. So much so that the likes of Eddie Jordan has said he is bored to death with Max Verstappen's dominance and said that it's even worse than the Michael Schumacher era. Of course, he's using Schumacher as his benchmark because he was a team principal in that era. He's, you know, maybe overlooked the Hamilton era a little bit there. But again, we can talk about that. Moving on to the rest of Jordan's comments, Max Verstappen will emerge to be the greatest driver of all time. I don't like the last couple of races, I have to tell you. I'm bored to death with him. He's just that good. He's making it boring, more so than the Schumacher era. So that's the full quote. Guys, I know we've had this debate many times, but you know, we're going to have it again. What do you think? Is it now too far? Are Red Bull too dominant? Is there anything F1 could or should do about it? Or do you have to kind of wait it out? Is every era of F1 actually ultimately defined by a dominant team, be it Ferrari, Mercedes or Red Bull or, you know, McLaren before that?
I think, yes, there are eras of dominance. That is F1, right? We go from one change to the next and there's always someone who comes out on top, apart from 2021. But there, you know, that was an extraordinarily exciting season, which we haven't seen in decades, right? So that's almost, you know, that's one of its own. But I think there's nothing F1 should do to prevent F1 from being so dominant. They've nailed the regulations. They've done their job. They've ticked all the boxes and they've done it perfectly. But, you know, I have friends and who are massive Red Bull fans, and even they are saying, I just want someone else to win a race. And, you know, these are proper F1 fans who don't want to see Max keep winning because it is getting really boring. And I think on the last podcast, I said it as well, which was every week we turn up and we know who's going to win before the race has even started. And, you know, that is testament to Red Bull and that is testament to Max Verstappen. However, the whole regulation change that we've just had was meant to bring the field together. And like any regulation change that we have, which is meant to do that, it's put one team miles and miles ahead. And once we start to close that gap near to the next regulation change, it will happen again. So I think it is just the sport, but is it getting boring? P1 is getting boring, but the rest of the field, it's still exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're really on something there. Like, take Canada as a case study. If it was Verstappen who hit the wall, not George Russell, that race could well have been an absolute cracker. You'd have the two Mercedes sandwiching the pincer move on the Aston Martin. Can Alonso get past on track, or will the Mercedes use the strategy against him and he has to cover off one of them, so on and so forth? It would have been a very, very interesting race. And generally with F1, you get these periods of, I don't know if you're familiar with the theory of punctuated equilibrium, where basically you get like a baseline and every now and again, the equilibrium is punctuated by an extreme or different event. And that is ultimately how F1 is. 2021 would be punctuating the equilibrium. It's a one-off event. You know, 2010 was a great season. The start of 2012, when you had, what, seven winners in seven races. The back end of the 2000s was a really good run. You had, what, four or five different champions in 5 years. So it can happen, but I think you're right that this is generally the norm. We do have to kind of accept that to a certain degree, but also appreciate, to kind of counter your point about the new regulations, Ollie, it has brought the field closer together. Bar Red Bull, it has done. Aston Martin are now in the mix. Aston Martin have gone from the second worst car, or potentially even arguably the worst at the start of last season, to at times the second best this season. That is great. We haven't seen that a lot recently. But now we don't really have back markers. We have a whole midfield that could realistically fight for points. So yeah, it has worked. I think we just need to give it more time to work further up the field.
I think the main issue is it's boring because no one can challenge Max. Like, Red Bull were in the lead, but Perez isn't at the moment, not since Miami. So it is literally Max will get pole, Max will win the race. And if you take him out of it, it is a very exciting season. Like you said, Sam, there's hardly any back markers. But when you add Max in, he is so far ahead and so dominant against the rest of the field that it does become predictable and it does become boring. And I think for me, that's the main issue, that no one can challenge him. So it does lose that element of like racing and excitement as well. But I mean, it's exciting for the rest of the field because every team has got points. I mean, in Canada, we saw Albon finish in the top 10, adding to the points. We saw Mercedes versus Aston Martin, McLaren's versus Haas's versus Alpine's. The rest of the field is great. It is just car number one that is so dominant that it does become boring.
I know this wasn't the kind of nucleus of your point or the overarching theme, but do you think maybe the issue is the cost cap that it kind of locks in those advantages? Because you can't progress against another team because you can't really spend more money than them. Even Haas now are getting up to the point where they have enough money to max out the cost cap. So maybe a solution to that specific issue is a weighted cost cap, much like with wind tunnel time, where team who finishes 10th, they get X million more to spend the next season, so on and so forth. Would that take steps to improving it? Because at the moment, Red Bull's advantage is kind of set in stone, and then you add the fact that Max Verstappen is at the moment by far the most dominant driver in the sport. No one can really hold a candle to him. Fernando Alonso on his day, Lewis Hamilton on his day at the moment. So yeah, I think we're unlucky that we've got the two preeminent forces in F1 at the moment teamed up together, and which is what's creating that situation, because clearly Sergio Perez can't mix it to the level that Max can.
I mean, I'm just going to say one thing on the cost cap, right? Which is we've only, since we've had the cost cap, had one team that's breached it. And that team seems to be doing brilliantly. Now, you can't link the two because we don't know enough about it, right? We're not in those meetings. But was an advantage gained? That's an open question. I'm not suggesting anything, but are the two linked? Possibly.
Yeah, causation, correlation. It's an interesting one. And I guess that's what the penalty is seeking to address with the wind tunnel time. But yeah, for me, ultimately, with almost every F1 season, there's an element of having to find the stories elsewhere from maybe the fight for the title or the fight for the win. Because there is, you know, you take the Premier League, for example. It's not just about who wins the league. It's about who gets top four. Which team, unlikely team, is going to get Europe next season and then probably suffer the year after because their squad's not big enough? Who's going to be in the relegation fight? Who's going to survive? There's so many different facets, and I think we get too fixated on who's winning races and who's winning the title. We need to spend more time on looking who is outperforming their car. Who is Ayrton Senna in a Tolman? So there are things to get excited about, and I think that's important when we have an era like we do at the moment.
Exactly. And, you know, for those with short-term memories, they won't remember Lewis Hamilton winning every single race. And if for whatever reason he had a failure, it was Valtteri Bottas or Nico Rosberg who won it. You know, this is not new. This has happened before. And there were so many races where we sat there and we already knew he was going to win and it would be Lewis Hamilton. And that was in the past. And there is a lot more talk at the moment of should F1 return to the past? And I don't mean in terms of Hamilton winning, Abby.
No, it is in terms of DRS, because as F1 fans should know, DRS was introduced in 2011 to promote overtaking. But since then, there have been concerns that the sport is now too reliant on DRS to overtake and that it isn't a challenge anymore and you can't overtake without it. So obviously for 2026, there are going to be new rules and regulations, and a lot have speculated whether DRS should be taken off. Last year, Vettel criticised it, saying the interesting bit would be take the DRS off and see how the racing really is, and if you are able to overtake a lot better than, let's say, in the past. But now Nicholas Tombesi has said that DRS is here to stay, ultimately. He said, in an ideal world, it is conceivable to remove DRS, but in the short term, it will not happen because otherwise overtaking would be very difficult. We are no longer in the 80s when simulations were not so advanced and the differences between one car and the next were great. With the current level of technology, of science, removing DRS would be a risk for the sport. So there's that topic of conversation, but also Fernando Alonso has now criticised the size of an F1 car. Obviously, they're significantly bigger than they have been in the past. And he believes that the size of the car is causing a bigger problem than the actual weight of the car. He said, I don't think reducing the weight would change much. I think it's more the size of the cars than the weight of the cars, which make things a little bit more difficult. Overtaking fights into the first couple of corners in the race, it is difficult now to position the car just because of the size of it, not the race, not the weight of it. So there's these two conversations going on. So one, do you guys think we should remove DRS? Because, I mean, when Red Bull have it down a straight, it's like no one can get past them. And two, do you think the size of the car has a bigger impact than the weight?
I think no, you can't remove DRS. DRS is inbuilt into the sport now. We see it in other series. It's here to stay. What I do think F1 have been doing a very good job at, or attempting to do a very good job at, is manage the gains of DRS on different circuits and adapt and change the DRS zones dependent on what they've seen in previous years. You know, we see DRS zones change each year, which means that they are paying attention. They are monitoring that. What I do think needs to be more regulated is the power of the of DRS. So why is the Red Bull getting such a huge advantage compared to the rest of the field? There has to be a reason for it. If we can make it so that the DRS gain is the same across the field, then I think that will be the ultimate the ultimate result for having DRS, right? Why should it be different for different cars? The regulations need to be more tightly monitored. And in terms of the size of F1 cars, I think that's just where we are. This is F1 right now. They are, you know, the technical regulations are so specific that there's not much that teams can even change on these cars. They're 2 meters wide. I can't remember how long they are, but they're extremely long. It's like driving a boat.
5.5 meters long.
5.5 meters. Would we like to see them smaller? Yeah. I mean, you look at the 80s, they looked cool as hell. But, you know, safety, I don't know how much that comes into it. But I think the size of F1 cars are probably not going to change. Sam, I'm interested to hear what you think on those two.
I'm going to be the anti-Ollie. I disagree on both counts. I think on the first one,
there's a change.
No, but we agree on a lot.
This is a conversation. I will listen to your point.
It's a conversation, and also the listeners will find it boring if we agreed on everything all the time. Who's your favourite driver? Who's your favourite driver, Abby? So, yeah, I mean, for starters, I think there are things that you can do with DRS to better regulate it, which is what you've kind of alluded to there. It needs to be more uniform. I think the difficulty is that each car designs their own rear wing, and then that's where the kind of, you know, the issue starts, basically. A solution for you that would be, I guess, more easily kind of equalized across the grid would be a push-to-pass alternative. Something like we see in IndyCar, Or reducing the number of times you can use DRS during a race, just being more creative with it. It not being applicable if you're coming up behind a car you're about to lap. Little things like that, I think, because you get an advantage then. Maybe it offsets the disadvantage of being behind a car for, you know, half a lap.
Do you know what, Sam? They're brilliant points. Both of those I'll give you.
So there's stuff you need to do, but also in terms of to truly understand the effect of DRS and what the sport would look like without it, you need to take it off. You almost need to have a non-championship race, or maybe even, I don't know, trial it in F2 or F3, get rid of it, see what it does. And yeah, that's very different because, and this will lead on to the second point about weight and size, those cars are different to F1. They're smaller and they weigh less. So you can't maybe get a complete kind of replicated experiment in that sense. But I think, ultimately you need to trial it trial F1 without it to see just how bad the aerodynamics of the Formula One cars are these days for following. And this is bearing in mind that we've made steps to improve it. With regards to weight and size, I think...
Before you move on to your next point, Sam, can I just say the moment of brilliance that you've just said was having a certain amount of times you can use DRS. I think that would be... That's a key, right? You've got to choose when you use it. It's not just available all the time. I think that's probably one of the best ideas I've heard.
Thank you. Or even, I mean, if you want to go even further, you know, in a DRS zone, you can only use it for X number of meters. And you know, the technology's there, right? Surely. And you know, is it more advantageous to use DRS at the start of a straight or at the end of a straight? You know, let the teams and the drivers work that out. They're, you know, they're the maths whiz kids. An intermediate point, if I may. Do we have too much technology in the sport? Is there a way to restrict it? Should we limit it? You know, Abby, you talked about, or Ollie, you talked about the amount of information in the simulations and knowing all that data that we didn't have in the 80s. There are, you know, bigger differences in the cars and so on and so forth. You surely could limit that. And yes, it's another thing for the teams to try and get around, but let them try and get around. It adds more flavor. It adds another dynamic into the sport. So yeah, there's things you can do there on the weight and size. I think I can't decide if I think they're interlinked. I think they're both an issue though. The cars are way too big. I think they're too heavy as well. I think you want a slightly more flighty, on the edge of your seat experience, both as a driver and as a fan. I loved watching the cars in the early 2000s twitching their way through a corner. Or even before that, when they weren't so twitchy, when there were kind of, you know, wider cars that were more grounded in the mid-90s, you still had to wrestle with it. So... maybe I'm just nostalgic, but I think you do need to go back and you do need to try and make the cars smaller because they're racier. And yeah, there's so many different steps that the sport could take, and I think they should. And I don't think we really should kind of accept this is where we are. I think there's always things they can do.
And I think fundamentally, F1 is doing all they can to make racing more exciting. It's only in their interest. They're not going to be trying to make it more boring, that's for sure. But these have been some interesting discussions. I've enjoyed these. So do let us know your thoughts on, is F1 getting boring? And should they go back to getting rid of DRS, making the car smaller? Let us know your thoughts. We'll read them out on the next show. Email us, info@formulanerds.com, with your thoughts. And yeah, look forward to seeing what you guys think. But that is all we have time for today. I'd like to thank my wonderful panel, Sam and Abby. Abby, thank you.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Thank you. And Sam?
It's been a pleasure.
Good stuff. Well, there is no race this weekend, but we will be back next week for more news and, of course, the review of the Austrian Grand Prix. So, until then, goodbye.
You're listening to the Cut to the Race podcast. It's lights out and away we go!
Sports Social Podcast Network.